Welcome to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB. I'm your host, Jennifer Mealy, and I'm so excited to be here today with one of the most fascinating ladies in Greensburg, and her name is Sylvia Filippini-Fantoni, and she is the director and CEO of the Westmoreland Museum of American Art. Welcome to the show, Sylvia.
Thank you, Jennifer. Glad to be back.
I know it's so you've been in town for a little over a year. Give us your impressions of Greensburg and how things are going.
I mean, to be honest, it has been a fabulous year. A fabulous year for me personally, a fabulous year for the museum. I think everybody has been so welcoming to me. It's great to see people coming back to the museum. We actually had our highest attendance ever recorded between July of 23 and June of 24, which was really great for us. It was a good year with a lot of great exhibitions, tons of new programming. And yeah, it's been very good. One of the things that my parents told me when I moved here, they said, "Oh, Sylvie, you've never lived in such a small town. Are you gonna be bored?" And actually, I've had the best time of my life. I'm always invited to events. There's so much going on in this town. It's really great to see how rich in culture and enthusiasm and community this place is. And there's new things popping up every time. We've had two new directors also at the Symphony and the Cultural Trust, and we're talking more and collaborating more. So it's really great. There's really a great synergy right now, and I feel that Greensburg is winning out of it. So I'm really, really happy to be here.
Well, I think although Greensburg is a small town, I think they place very high value on the
Absolutely.
arts and culture here. And it's very important to them that it's supported and that it's sustained and that it continues for generations to come. And that's probably what you're finding. But also, I think people are intrigued with you and your leadership and what you bring to the Greensburg community. So for people who might not know a lot about you, why don't we start from the beginning, where you grew up and how you ended up here?
Yes, as you can hear from my accent, I wasn't exactly born in this country. I was born in Italy about 50 years ago. I also turned 50 this year, so big,
Happy
big year.
birthday.
And I've always, I grew up in a town, in a small town, bigger than Greensburg, but still somewhat relatively small town in northern Italy. And it was one of these beautiful places, medieval town. I went to school in a 13th century convent. You're surrounded by beauty, art, history all around you. And when I was 13, I had to move to kind of the modern part of town. And that was really hard for me and sort of ignited that sort of need to make art and history part of my life because I was kind of missing it so much, having grown up surrounded by it. And that's sort of the career I chose, which took me to many different countries. I lived in the Netherlands for 5 years and I did some studies there as well. I lived in France, where I got my PhD. I lived in the UK. I came over to the US when I was younger twice. First, during a summer in San Francisco, my cousin lived there and I was able to take classes at UC Berkeley. And then I came back during my PhD for a year at the Getty in Los Angeles. And then finally, I came back here in 2011. I accepted a job at Indianapolis Museum of Art, and I have not left since. I've traveled a little bit around, moved around. I was in Raleigh for a while, Newark, and now I'm here. But what brought me to the US was really the fact that museums are very different here than in Europe. I think in Europe, museums are a lot more tourist destinations or academic institution. And what I liked about America is that museums tend to be more community organization. And particularly in smaller towns, the museum fulfills a role that's much bigger than just being a place where you go and see art. It's a place where, that marks a lot of key moments in people's life. People come here as kids with their schools and with their parents, and then they get married here. They do their marriage proposal here. They come back with their kids. And so you feel like, the museum is really a part of people's life in a town like Greensburg. And this is what I like. I like to kind of create this long-term relationship with people. And make sure that the museum kind of becomes a vital hub in sort of the economy and the community of a town. And so that's what attracted me to America first and to a place like Greensburg. And I'm really happy to be here because I see all of this happening in front of my eyes here at the museum.
So, at that young age, that teenage age, when you move from the small town to a larger community. Did your parents, your parents said, we're making a change, we're going to move, we're going to try something different?
The town that I grew up in was divided into two parts. The sort of part that was on top of the hill was the old part, and this is where I grew up, right? This is all medieval, surrounded by beautiful Phoenician walls, and you kind of lived in sort of a weird time warp, where everything was old, and beautiful, and you had art as part of your daily life. And then there's the new town, which is kind of downtown. My mom moved downtown at a certain point. We couldn't afford living in the upper town anymore. And that's, so even though it wasn't far and I could still go and visit, it just wasn't the same when you're not really surrounded by that much history. And so I think that made it sort of an impact on me. And I think it sort of set me on a quest to sort of find to kind of create experiences that allow other people to feel the same way that I felt when I was surrounded by art, by beauty, by history. And it did change my life. It made a difference to me, and I want other people to feel the same way. And so
Amazing.
that's what drives me. And to me, museums are about people. A lot of people say, oh, it's about art. I'm not an art historian. My specialty, I started developing technology-based projects for museums, so really not a traditional path to being a director. But of course, I studied art a little bit, and I know art enough. But what drives me to museum is really it's the people. It's the people that create the works that you see here. They are telling a story. It's the people that come here that feel a connection with those work. It's the people that work in a museum and the communities that we partner with. So really, museums are about people, and that's what I like. I like people. I like being surrounded by people, engaging with people, and creating things for people to think, to enjoy themselves, relax, to think about the world in a different way. And that's why museums are so important in people's life, and we have to remember to continue supporting them.
But you're amazing and so cultured. And I think that's what people here are craving. I mean, living in France too, did you speak the language or did you just go or how did that work?
I actually lived in the Netherlands, where when I went first, I did not speak the language, and I ended up learning a very useless language, Dutch. Because I'm not, no offense to the Dutch people, but it is a language that really very few people speak around the world, and you don't really need it because everybody speaks English so well in the Netherlands. But I did speak French. I'm lucky enough that I am a product, if you want, of the European Union. So as a child, we were much more incentive. It was people could more freely move around Europe and worked and travel, and so that kind of incentivize people to learn more languages. So I went to a high school that taught specifically. I studied three languages there: English, French, and German. Of course, on top of Latin that you had to study, that just was a requirement in those days in Italy. Things are no longer the case now. But you kind of get this baggage of language knowledge, and then when you then know three languages, it's of course easier to learn another one. But that didn't scare me. I was, I remember my father was much of a believer of learning other languages. And so when I was a kid, it would send me to my aunt and uncles in Switzerland. My family, my great grandfather, my great uncle, and my great aunt moved to Switzerland after the war. And so they lived in a small village of about 50 people and 250 cows. And if you wanted to play with the kids, then you had to kind of say something in French. And so, even before going to school and learning French, I kind of could survive because I had spent my summer there. And if I wanted to play with the kids, I had to kind of figure it out. And as you can tell, I'm not shy, so that did not stop me. But yeah, I mean, I don't think you need to learn. Nowadays, the world is very globalized, and if you go to Paris, you can kind of survive speaking English, to be honest with you, and get jobs in English. The fact that I spoke French, of course, helped me because I had to study there, so that's a different thing. But yeah, no, it was great. It was a great experience, and I've learned a lot from living in different countries, and being exposed to different culture. I think it teaches you to be flexible, to adapt, and I think it's one of the strengths that you can bring to this job is that of adaptability and to different reality.
You are adaptable. I mean, we can pop you in the Netherlands or pop you in Westmoreland County and you're going to do fine. And I think it's wonderful. So you get here and you see the programming, you see the exhibitions that are coming, and you're probably really excited about opportunities to not only entertain people and form a connection, but also educate, right? That's a big piece of what you all do.
Yes, again, I think that we firmly believe of providing different experiences that are educational, of course, because we want people to learn from what these artists are thinking, are trying to say. And then, but we also wanted to do it in a fun and playful way. I really am a strong believer that, there are different people that approach museum in different ways. There are people that, love art history. They have a deep knowledge of art, and they will come more for the educational content and that level of depth that we absolutely need to provide and guarantee. And we have an incredible curatorial team and education team here that like support that goal. But we also know, and we actually did some market research last year, that there's a whole group of people that really might be intimidated by art to start with. They might think, oh, art is not really for me. But they really are looking for things to do in their social life. And then you want to bring them to the museum with maybe the idea of, we have something for your family, for your kids. And then you get them in, and then all of a sudden you expose them to art, and they're like, wait, what a second, this is actually fun. The exhibition that we have right now, it has the kind of quality of being very much a deep reflection on today's society, but you can also engage with it at a much more kind of, I don't want to use the word superficial, but emotional level, where it is, really about lights and shadows. And so I was in the room yesterday, in one of the rooms, immersive room that are currently part of our installation. And the kids were just playing around because they had the shadows reflected all over them. They wanted to take selfies. So different people connect with art in different ways. And so we need to really think of whatever we offer as something that provides a way in for people that have a different level of comfort with
I
art.
love it. It's a soft sell. It's let me invite you in. Let me invite you in even socially, educationally, and then help you form a connection. So let's talk about that featured exhibition right now, Interwoven. Can you describe it for
Yes.
people?
Yes. So this exhibition, the full title is Anila Kayum Aga Interwoven. And Anila Kayum Aga is the name of the artist. And Interwoven really sort of is a title that reflects the interconnection that exists between certain themes that you see across her work that she has developed all during her entire career. But I would say that the best way to describe this exhibition for people that are not familiar with her name or with art in general is that it's really an exhibition of light and shadows. And to me, this is really interesting because it really opens this season of light that we have at the museum. And we'll talk more in a minute. But this artist is mostly known for this beautiful light installation that she creates, right? You don't have to think there's a lot of bidimensional work, 2D work, but really what she's known for are these immersive experiences that she creates by placing a source of light either onto a sculpture. Let's say, it could be a box made of steel that is very decorated. And so if you put a light in the middle of it, it projects out the light and projects all the shadows around the gallery and the room. And you are also on yourself. So you kind of become part of the exhibition. In a few cases, the light is not inside, it's projected onto the work and creates a shadow on the wall. And there's a dialogue between the actual sculpture and the shadow that's creating with these. And the motifs that she uses in this sculpture are a very sort of decorative motif that she's inspired by Islamic art, Christian art, Judaica art. So she's inspired by different culture to kind of bring this sort of elements, beautiful patterns to life. And a similar approach, what is beautiful about this exhibition is that it's really the first time that this artist sort of has a survey of her career, of her 30-year career. So you see how she's evolved gradually towards this form. She starts with bidimensional work that has some embroidery elements to it, and then she adds little beads that reflect the light, and that then she kind of randomly projects something onto something, then that becomes the shadow that sort of she's interested in. And you kind of see the evolution of a work over time and how it all makes sense and how it all started with a bidimensional work, and now it's kind of these immersive experiences that she creates. And most people react to the beauty of it. It's just mesmerizing, the pattern, the light, the shadows, the fact that you're immersed in it. It's really talking to a lot of people in different ways. But then there's a whole extra layer of it. Really looking at themes that are important to her, the role of women, the connection with embroidery and beading, the role of women, particularly she's a Pakistani American artist, so coming from that culture, the role that women played in that society, immigration, the environment. These are all important themes to the artist that she weaves through her work. So there's many layers of connecting with the work, and we have a wonderful free audio guide. This is the first time that we actually offer such a service. We know that contemporary art can sometimes be challenging for people because it can be conceptual. And we felt it was very important to hear directly from the artist and about what each of this work represents and how what themes she wanted to express and how she got there, what the process was. Some of these are like fascinating, the way she kind of got to it, sometimes randomly, sometimes by total coincidence or serendipity. And so we developed this audio guide, and people can just pick it up at the desk, and it's free. Like, exhibition is free, so you can really have a magical, moment in this show. This weekend, I had a little tough day on Friday, and so I came on Saturday, and I kind of decided to take the audio guide and walk around the exhibition. Just, and it gave me so much peace and so much clarity, and I really enjoyed doing that. I was a visitor for a day in my own museum, and I like
I
that.
love that you did that. Now, how long is that going to be featured?
So the exhibition is going to be here until January 5th,
Okay.
and we're proud to say that afterwards we're going to travel to other museums in the United States. So it's really something that hopefully will resonate with audiences all around the country. So it's going to go to the to Wichita and then to Doylestown near Philadelphia at the Michener Museum. So
Isn't that
yes.
amazing? That's wonderful. Sylvia Filippini-Fantoni is the director and CEO of the Westmoreland Museum of American Art. She talked about the light installation, the exhibition Interwoven that is at the museum now, and how that season of light is very relevant to a number of events coming up. We'll talk about that after the break.
Classic Hits 107.1. Listen live at WHJBFM.com.
Welcome back to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB. I'm your host, Jennifer Mealy. I'm here today with Sylvia Filippini-Fantoni, and she is the director and CEO of the Westmoreland Museum of American Art. So, tis the season of light. You've talked about the light installation that is on display at the Westmoreland Museum of American Art until January 5th. But let's lead that into winter nights, January Art on Tap. Tell us about all the big events you have coming up.
Yes, we really thought the light was going to be the overarching theme of our winter season this year, not just because of this incredible exhibition that's all about lights and shadows, but of course we also have our annual winter lights, which are, what we do is we decorate the facade of the museum and the gardens with different lighting, and we have a number of events so that people can come and enjoy the outdoors, they can come inside and enjoy lights inside the museum. So, of course, in order for us to do that, they need to come at night. And generally, we're not open at night. So, we are actually going to offer late hours on Thursday nights, starting from the 21st of November. And then we have a break on Thanksgiving because we're closed. But then December 5th, December 12th, December 19th, and December 26th will be open until 8 p.m. So people can come in 5 to 8. It's going to be dark, so they can enjoy the lights outside, and then of course they get a wonderful treat inside as well. Not just the exhibition, but also we have a free cocoa station, a free sweet treat. We have a cash bar for those who really are in a mood for a cocktail at that time of the day, because lubrication is necessary sometimes. And then we have an art making activity where our kids and adults can just make something that's festive. Every week is going to be a different project. And then we have a talented musician to come and perform for us. And all of this will be free. So we hope that really people will take advantage of these late hours and come. And the beauty of it is actually that the night of the 5th, which is a Thursday, which also corresponds to Lumineer, I think, night in town. So people can come up to us after spending the evening in town. It's also the evening of our Holiday Mart. So Holiday Mart is the 5th. Until morning and evening, the 6th and the 7th during the day. And people can just come and also purchase something great from one of local artisans and artists to really, get ready for the Christmas gift season. So it's really kind of combination of different experiences here at the museum. And we look forward to welcoming here a lot of people during those days.
You know, you really do. You were set up for success, I think, by the reconstruction of the museum. I wonder if it would have been the same had the museum stayed the same, but it is so different and it's created sort of this indoor outdoor venue, right? Multiple levels, multiple places. So you really have the space now to get creative and bring people in. And I bet you love the space.
I do. I mean, it is, first of all, an incredible project, and kudos to Judy and the previous administration. They did such a great job in choosing the architect and really paying homage to the region, because the cantilever shape is something that, is inspired by Frank Lloyd Wright. And of course, he's such a staple here in the southwestern Pennsylvania, but also it has expanded the space that we have to create temporary exhibition. And then it creates this beautiful view of the city at night. And actually, I think if you don't mind me, I'm gonna connect it with our Art on Tap in January, because actually the special treat, it's a casino night, and it's gonna be on January 10. So it's a partnership with the local live casino here in the area. So they'll send some tables for people to play. Of course, there's not real money being played, but it's the fun is still the same. So we're very grateful to Sean and the team there for partnering with us. But the beauty is that event is going to be in between two exhibitions, so we can actually do it in a cantilever. So people can kind of play and have fun while looking at this beautiful view outside the cantilever with the courthouse lit. And so yeah, it is a special treat, and I'm glad that we can kind of offer that kind of experiences. When people go to a casino, they usually close inside and they don't see the outside for hours. So this will be a very different experience. So we'll be, some games, some entertainment, some gallery activities, some music, some fun, but with a beautiful view of Greensburg lit up at night. So that's going to be very special. And again, it's on January 10th, 6 to 9 p.m.
You
At the
need tickets
museum.
for that?
Yes, that is not
Okay.
free. So you have tickets. It's $12 for members and $15 for non-members, and you can buy the ticket online. And we also have raffles. People win a lot of great stuff during those nights. So we really invite people to come
That
and
sounds
have
like an
fun. A little
amazing
James
evening.
Bond beginning of the year. Why not?
Yes. Yes, I love the partnership, and that's a great way to create more traffic and invite new people in. So that's a great idea. I think it's wonderful. Now, you had mentioned a vintage ball, olive wood. Why don't you talk about those events?
Exactly. So every January, I think it's our third or fourth at this point, we do a vintage ball where we kind of, pick a theme and invite people to come all dressed up, and we do a fashion show of the era, and we have great music. Last year, I was dressed up in my disco queen in 1980s, and I danced
Sure.
Madonna all night long. It was just so much fun. I had a few friends coming as well. And in January, it's so cold outside, and it's hard to get out of the house, but when you do, you really want to have a great time. So this year, the theme for our vintage ball, which will take place on Saturday, January 25th, 6 to 9 p.m., is really a mix through carnival, circus, old Hollywood. So these are kind of a combination of different themes that we're throwing out there. And it's going to be a fun night. It's also a ticketed event. There will be food, there will be there will be circus acts, there will be games, really a magical night of fun at the museum. And it's another opportunity to dress up. You don't need to just do it for Halloween. You can do it any other time of the year, and this is going to be the perfect time because it's going to be so cold outside, so you kind of want to have fun and warm up inside.
Sounds amazing. And the olive wood?
Sorry?
Did you say there was olive wood involved too?
Hollywood, like Hollywood,
Oh, Hollywood.
Hollywood,
Okay, I'm
old
sorry.
Hollywood theme. So circus,
Yes,
Hollywood meets
Hollywood.
carnival meets circus.
Isn't that going to be so fun? Now, how do
A
you
fun.
have such an incredible team? You have such an
We do.
incredible team. Do you all just sit around after work and say, let's come up with some of these ideas, because it's amazing to me how you come up with all of this and the commitment of the people to work. I mean, this is a lot of work. Do people
It is
know
a lot.
this?
They do. They do when in their contract it says that they have to work weekends
Yeah.
and evenings. They regret it maybe a few months later, but no. Actually, this is the beauty of working in a museum. You have a lot of creative people that sort of work in this sector. They really are attracted to the arts. Some of them are artists themselves. We actually have a little exhibition right now called Art Work, It's a play on word, but it is actually a works of art created by staff because we have so many artists on staff. And working with creative people is really a fantastic thing. It's one of the things that attracted me to this job. I'm not probably the most creative person on earth, but I really enjoy being surrounded by creative people and
I don't
providing a
believe
strategy.
that. I don't believe it for one second. I think you're a visionary, and then probably all the people around you are like, okay, how are we going to do that? How are we going to figure this
No,
out?
but we have a great team, and we actually have a new manager of a public program starting next week. So we're very excited about it. We're welcoming him from Sama Altoona, and so we are looking forward to getting more and even more energy into our programming. The programming is really the big drivers for us of attendance. I think people want to have fun and engage in a social way, and I think we can provide a great environment for that.
Going to be amazing. Now, let's talk about all the ways that people can learn more. Give us your website, your social media channels, all that kind of good stuff.
Yes. So, yes, the museum has a wonderful website. We actually just retweaked it. So we have a new navigation. It's hopefully more user-friendly. And it's the westmoreland.org.
Okay.
That's our website. And we also have a presence on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Thread. Anything that's social media, just look for the Westmoreland and you will be able to find us. And we also have the opportunity for you to sign up for our regular emails that we send out. So we send email once a month about what's coming up in the month, and then we send emails for individual events that we have. And we also have a magazine called Perspectives, which is available for members only. So if you want to become a member, that's a great opportunity. We have discounts. Of course, the museum is free, but membership gives you access to our opening events for exhibition in the cantilever. It gives you discounts for programs. It gives you first access to certain to camps, for instance, discounts in the shop, discounts in the cafe. So it's really advantageous to become a member. And then on top of it, you get this beautiful magazine that gets more information about what's coming up. We also have another version of this perspective with just events that's called Happenings, and that's going out to about 11,000 people that kind of are registered with us. So it is definitely another way to kind of stay in the know. But there's tons of way, or just stop by. We are open 10 to 5, Sunday to, sorry, Wednesday to Sunday. And then, of course, during the holidays, we'll be open later on the Thursdays of the 21st of November, and then the four Thursdays in December
Right, for
until
winter nights.
8 p.m. for
Yes.
winter nights, exactly.
Well, I'm already putting it on my calendar. I'm writing all of
Fantastic.
this down so I could put it on my calendar. And I like the idea of too of being able to bring the family. I know my daughters have attended camp there, summer art camp, and they absolutely loved it. They didn't want to leave. So you
I
have a
know
great
the camps
staff.
are so much fun. Yeah.
And I do have to say, I mean, the marketing, the communication, I mean, it's beautiful. It's so well done. And it takes a lot of work. And I hope by listening to this program today, people understand that it's more than an exhibition. You have to tell people about it to bring them in. And all of these creative ways to bring people in are so important and so critical to the community. You're doing a fantastic job, Sylvia.
Thank you. Thank
Fantastic.
you so much for your support. And next year is going to be even more exciting. I'm going to have to say, I'm going to give you a little sneak peek. We haven't announced
Oh,
it yet,
okay.
but by the time this is gonna air, it will be in public knowledge. The museum has been, we've been. I think the museum world has been thinking about what we've been doing and how representative we have been of the world at large. And I think one of the things that we all realize is that not enough women artists are showcased in museum. I don't know if you know, but this is a question. If I ask you what percentage of women artists are represented in American Art Museum, what do you think that percentage is,
I would have hoped
Jennifer?
it would be 50%, but I'm gonna guess that's not even close.
Not even close. It's actually 13%
Oh
only. Yeah.
no.
And even though we've made a lot of strides and we've acquired a lot of female artists, particularly since we've been able to acquire art from the post 1950s here, we're still at that same level within this museum. So next year we're going to decide dedicate it to women artists. So it's going to be the year of women artists, And we're going to showcase a lot of women artists in our collection, a lot of traveling exhibitions that focus on women artists. And I think the current exhibition that we have is also by a woman artist. So in a way, we're kicking off the year a little bit earlier with the current exhibition. So next year, there's going to be a lot of visibility for women artists at our museums. And we're very proud of highlighting the groundbreaking work that that these artists have done to contribute to the development of American art. And yeah.
Going to be wonderful. Sylvia Filippini-Fantoni is the director and CEO of the Westmoreland Museum of American Art. I'm Jennifer Mealy. Thanks for listening to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB.